it's a Glock. And my brother's like, it's a gun. And my brother's like, you have a gun? And I'm like, I do. And it was just like downhill from there. Like I said, right, total Chernobyl, total nuclear meltdown. My parents didn't talk to me for weeks. Called me everything under the book, and you know, you're irresponsible. I have to bring guns home. And I'm like, how can I be irresponsible? I'm mature enough to get married. I'm mature enough to bring a child into this world, but I'm not mature enough to have a tool in my home. So that was fun. My parents didn't talk to me for 2 weeks, so it was actually really nice. But at the end of the day, they finally, I mean, now, no.
I'll get into it later.
That'll be an interesting topic.
It blows my, anyway, cool. So.
Anyway, do the intro.
We're good.
I'm recording, so.
Yeah, cool. I'm recording.
Red lights everywhere.
Yeah.
Looks like it.
Well, welcome to the Big Tech Soreness podcast. I'm Ike. We have Chris. We're joined today with Brendan, his first time appearance in front of the camera. And then today, our guest is Yehuda Reamer, the Pew Pew Jew.
Nailed it.
he's here with us, came down. Thanks for coming down. Tell us a little bit about yourself and...
Yeah, originally from LA, moved to Texas almost 9.5 years ago.
Okay.
Work in the firearms industry. I have a whole brand called the Pew Pew Jew, and hell, I haven't have any regrets ever about leaving LA. Not one. There's nothing I miss.
What part of LA were you in?
I was in North Hollywood, Valley Village.
Okay.
Cool. The Valley. God, I hate it there. I haven't been back in 6 years, and, you know, every few months... You know, my wife and I will have a rough week, you know, for whatever, not between us, but just like with life in general. And we get into bed and we're like, you know, we had built-in babysitters there with my parents. We had some friends there. They're like, do we have any regrets leaving LA? And then we just start laughing. We're like, yeah, no. And like our whole week gets better. So.
What brought you from California to Texas?
Freedom, really. We were some of the early people to have left LA way before the influx that we see now. My wife and I saw the writing on the wall when Jerry Brown was still the governor. And we decided, you know, from our house to, let's say, the local coffee store, it was about 1.2 miles to drive. In that distance, there were 4 billboards for strip clubs. We have little kids. And, you know, we were still young. We were planning on having more kids. And, like, we just don't want our kids to be in this kind of environment, that there's no need for them to see that kind of stuff. So I went on a pilot trip to Texas in 2012. And from there, it just I fell in love with Dallas. And, yeah, I know some people will be like, oh, he's not a true Texan. He lives in Dallas. I got to live in a Jewish community, okay? If there was a Jewish community out here, I'd probably move out here. But, you know, we moved to Dallas in 2014. And like I said, at the time I was actually writing for Ben Shapiro, his old website. And it was great. So I was able to work from anywhere. And Texas just became home. We haven't been back to LA in 6 years.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
So how long have you been in the gun community?
So my first book came out January 9th, 2017, and that was it. I released a book. I was terrified to release the book because I didn't know, you know, this is a book about gun safety. I didn't know if I ended up actually doing it right, despite all the help I had from friends who were in the gun world. I didn't know if I was doing it right, and I didn't know how it was going to be received, but, you know, it was highly received. It's become a staple for educating your children on gun safety. And what really was the turning point for me is I was at my first NRA show in Atlanta in 2017, and I saw Alan Gottlieb of the Second Amendment Foundation.
Oh, yeah.
So I've become very close with Alan over the years, but I went up to him like, oh, Mr. Gottlieb, here's my book. Can you endorse it? Write me a blurb. And he's like, oh, this is fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. No problem. I'll do it. He goes, by the way, do you want to speak at the GRPC, which is the Gun Rights Policy Conference? And I'm sitting there. I'm like, Gun Rights Policy Conference, which is going to be like 50 people there, right? Like, and you have to understand, like, I've always been a behind-the-scenes guy. I do not like being in front of a camera. It's changed. But up until I was 30, behind the scenes, I'm terrified of the limelight. I'm like, yeah, okay, 50 people, I'll cowboy up and, you know, speak in front of 50 people. This is what went through my mind in like a matter of like half a second. But I said, oh, absolutely, I'll be glad to speak. How many people usually attend? And he's like, 400 or 500. And my heart sank. I became white as a ghost, but like I already said yes, and I wasn't going to be a total wuss. And I come home. And my wife is like, you look like a ghost. You look like, you know, you're about to die. I'm like, I feel like it. And, you know, 6-7 months later, I spoke. I opened up my speech with a joke making fun of Barack Obama. I got a standing ovation. And that's how the whole advocacy and the whole Pew Pew Jew brand, that was like my origin story.
That's cool. And you were a writer previously, or you are a writer. You were a writer previously for Ben Shapiro.
Yeah.
You did content, speech writing.
Not speech writing. Right. News articles, journalism.
Okay, cool.
Before Daily Wire, he had a website called Truth Revolt. And I originally started off doing video, in the video world, helping other journalists grab video from, you know, if someone would say something stupid from CNN, I would, you know, go online, find the clip, grab it, send it to the journalist so they can get it up. But there was a shooting in LA, was it LAX, years ago. I don't know if you remember this. There was a shooting and I think one person was killed, but ABC, I believe it was ABC News, they did a whole like a animated video of what happened during the shooting. And they depicted the shooter to have a full auto M16 with a M203 connected to the bottom.
That's fantastic.
Right.
Seems a bit accurate.
Seems yeah, right.
Logical, right.
I think the guy had a MP15, right? Just standard MP15.
Yeah.
And I sent the video to Ben, and I'm like, dude, do you see this BS? I said, that's not what he was using, a boring semi-automatic. And Ben's like, well, write it up. I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, what do you mean write it up? I do video. He's like, just write it up. I'm like, okay. So I wrote it up. I sent it to him. He goes, oh, it's published. And I went to the website and like, there's my name on the website as a published writer, if you will. And I'm like, I just got this like, I need more. Addiction immediately set in. And I've always enjoyed creative writing, but this was journalism, so it was a little different. But I kind of got like this addicted, like I need more of this. I need to see my name up there. And, you know, definitely the ego got the best of me at that point in my life. You know, I was still young and dumb and not as mature as I am now, but it definitely spawned, you know, my writing career.
And then you went on to release your first book, which is called Safety On, An Introduction to the World of Firearms for Children. And we'll have a link and some pictures along with this. And you've since then published how many books here?
I have 9 books. I mean, you can see all of them on the back of the Spot Gilly. You'll be able to see all of them. But I have books, Gun Safety, the book 27 Words is a breakdown of the 27 words of the Second Amendment for children. I don't go into the whole liberal bull crap of like, oh, well, no, if you put the comma here, I'm like, the comma's not there, okay? It's the Founding Fathers' original intent of what the Second Amendment was supposed to be. So that's for children. I have a coloring book version of the safety book. I have 105 explosive gun jokes, a Spot Gilly book that we were talking about, which is a, you know, Where's Waldo for gun owners. I have 10 Little Liberals, which is my only non-political book that I actually I wrote it as a post when I was working for Ben. And I was going to post it on social media, and then I stopped, and then I went back, and I stopped. And finally, after like my first 2 books were published, I'm like, well, it's not so hard to get a book published. I'm going to put this into book form. And I did, and It is like a very brutal awakening. Like what happens when a liberal idea is confronted with like a conservative idea, right? So it's like 10 little liberals standing in a line and you see a bunch of like these liberals all on iPhones or some kind of phone. You can't really tell, but like there's a big sign that says we accept, you know, what are they called? Like a EB card, EB cards, whatever it is. So it says 10 little liberals standing in a line. And you turn the page and you see a guy holding a sign up that says, get a real job. And it says, told to get a real job. Now they're only 9. And you see like one run away. And that kind of goes down and down. And so I wrote that. I have a 10 little gun grabbers. And then my book, Bullet Points, which is still driving people crazy, is that book. What I love about that book is, you know, we all of us go through life. And at least one point in our life, we're always sitting there. We're like, you know, I wish I thought of that.
Yeah.
Right. This is my I wish I thought of that moment, right? Like it's something that's so simple. And even though it's been done, but like never in the gun world.
Yeah.
And it's so simple. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. And I did. And from the minute I thought of the idea until publication was about 2.5 months. So, yeah.
There are some fascinating ideas on the page.
You were skeptical at first.
You got me.
You got me.
Because you asked. We were communicating via Instagram for a while, and I've been following you on there for a while. I even quoted you in a podcast a couple months back when we were talking about something.
Yeah, you sent it to me.
Yeah. And but then you messaged me, but it didn't come through. I saw the notification of it, and you're like, hey, have you seen any of my books? And I pulled up the conversation again, and the notification was gone. I was like, okay, whatever, Instagram. Thank you for being Instagram. And when I sit down here, you're like, hey, did you check that one out? I was like, oh, this is going to be an interesting conversation. Way more interesting. And it is. That's a fascinating book. I made it about halfway through as I sat down.
The best was like, can you explain this to me in 15 words or less?
Yeah.
I'm like, less.
But fantastic book. We're going to have to get a couple copies for the...
Yeah, I should have brought mine and got it signed.
Yeah. Did you already have that?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I'm on the back end of things, and I'm trying to catch up. But it's a good book. Fantastic.
Thank you.
So the first one came out in 2017.
Yeah.
How were you releasing, like, one a year after that? Or
No. I did 4 books in my first year.
Oh, wow. Okay. Just jumping right in.
Between January 9th, 2017 to January 9th, 2018, I released 4.
Wow.
I released the safety book, the coloring book, the 10 little liberals, and I forgot to bring that one. ABCs of guns, which is literally... A is for ammunition and AR-15. B is for barrel and bipod. With just this amazing photographer, Stickman Photography. I mean, I'm sure you've seen his work across.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he gave me all the photos.
Oh, wow.
I worked with him. And it that was my first 4. And then it's been like every year and a half since then, give or take. Some 2 in a year.
Okay.
I mean, like I said, Bullet Points was super easy, right? I mean, it literally from conception until, you know, it hit the shelves was always comes in twos.
Yeah.
So Bullet Points was, like I said, the easiest one, right? From conception until it hit the shelves was 2 months. So, you know, 2 months is nothing. And then really the hard
part. How many pages a day do you think you wrote on Bullet Points?
You know what the hardest part about Bullet Points was? The writing was simple. That was easy. It's coming up with chapters, right? Because the chapters have to be not just enticing to gun people, but it needs to be enticing to liberals, right? So that's why like the chapter 1 is AR-15 and other assault rifles. Right, like there's actually like some thought process that went into the chapters. Once I knew what I wanted to write about, then The rest was simple.
Too easy.
Too easy.
That's awesome. So you mentioned it a little bit when we first started. And I don't know how much of the story that we were able to capture when we were first talking about it. Let's talk about your inspiration for writing that first book with child safety and the rift that you had with your family.
Absolutely. So the first time, so I'd gone shooting a few times in my life beforehand. I was in Israel. A couple times I shot. But one of my best friends called me one day, and this was like one of those things, like right out of a movie when like you find out, like, you know, you see like the guy and he's with his best friend. His best friend ends up not being, you know, a little insurance salesman, but ends up being like some super secret John Wick spy. Right. So my buddy calls me. He's like, hey, let's go to the range. I'm like, okay, you know, we'll go rent a few guns. Right. And we get to the range and he comes walking in with like, I don't even know what it was, but it was like right out of the movies. He's like, boom, right. He like slams the bag down, and it wasn't like a normal gun case. He starts unrolling it like one of those, like canvas,
yeah, like old knife school bag or something.
Yeah, and there's just like rifle, shotgun, handgun, rifle, shotgun. And I just turned to my buddy. I'm like, who the are you? You know, like what the hell's going on? And he's like, yeah, no, man, I've been doing this for years. I'm like, and just now you tell me about this? And he's like, yeah, let's shoot. So we shot, and I kind of just got the bug. And I was married. I turned to my wife. I'm like, hey, I want to go buy my first gun. And she was very against it. She didn't want guns in the home. Mm-hmm. But I told her, I buy you everything you want. I will be very responsible. She's like, okay, no problem. So I get my first gun, and I was able to keep it a secret from my parents for a while. And again, the reason why I was keeping it from a secret from my parents, like I was married and out of the house. I already had a baby. We were in an apartment. I wasn't like, oh, my mom and dad might find out. It was more like that Jewish mother's guilt that I'm sure you've heard of in the past. It's 100% true, right? And I'm like, I just don't want to deal with that crap. Yeah. Like, it's just not me. And my younger brother, one day we were by my parents for dinner, and my younger brother's like, so man, when can I go shoot your Glock? And my parents are like, what's a Glock? And my brother's like, it's a gun. And my parents are like, you have a gun? And I'm like, I do. And it was just like downhill from there. Like I said, right? Total Chernobyl, total nuclear meltdown. My parents didn't talk to me for weeks, called me everything under the book. And, you know, you're irresponsible. How can you bring a gun into the home? And like, I'm like, how can I be irresponsible? I'm mature enough to get married. I'm mature enough to bring a child into this world, but I'm not mature enough to have a tool in my home. So that was fun. My parents didn't talk to me for 2 weeks, so it was actually really nice. but at the end of the day, they finally, I mean, now, you know, they've actually warmed up and they're very proud of what I've been doing, you know, accomplished. 2013 was an insane year for me, from, you know, having my Fox News debut to being on Alan West podcast, Sebastian Gorka's radio show, you know, just releasing my ninth book. I mean, they're very proud of what I'm doing now. So they've definitely changed their mind and tune to being, you know, gun ownership. When they're at home, I have like what my biggest gun on me, like, and I specifically like open carry it, and I'm like, hey mom, how you doing? You know, just to, like, you know, but no, it was a while how I got into it. And then I started writing a book, like I said earlier, right? I started writing the book because I wanted my kids to be familiar with firearms. I think if you try to hide them, just like we all try hiding, you know, the Christmas presents or, you know,
right,
the Hanukkah presents, your kids look for them. They will find them. It's going to happen. But when you take the mystique away from the firearms, like, it's just like, who cares? My 7-year-old, my buddy just got into guns, you know, with everything going on in the world. He finally is like, okay, you know what? I see the light. Help me. So he got his first gun. I was helping him clean it, and I was cleaning my guns at the same time. So I had like four or five guns on the table, and my 7-year-old like walks up to me, goes, "Daddy," he goes, "Can you sign into Netflix for me?" Like he just didn't care.
Yeah.
Like to him, they're like, "Oh, it's guns. Like who cares?" But not in a like I'm gonna brush it off. But like, yeah, when it's my turn, I'm gonna learn to shoot guns, and that's gonna be fun. Like I just, you know, he just didn't care. And my buddy was like, "That's crazy." He goes, "If his 6-year-old would have seen the guns, he would have been like all over it." And took me 5.5 years to get my book published, my first book. I'd been turned down by over 35 literary companies, 35 publishing companies. Wow. Literary agents, publishing companies. Mm-hmm. I finally found an agent. She got me an amazing deal with a huge huge publishing company, and about 3 months after I got the deal, I was sitting in a movie theater, and to this day, I will never watch that movie again. I took my kids to see The Secret Life of Pets, and I hate that movie so much because of this. My phone starts buzzing, and the literary company found out that Julie Golub, this is nothing to do with Julie. I absolutely love her. She is a friend of mine. She's an amazing woman. Are you familiar with Julie?
Oh, yeah.
So I love Julie. So they found out that she was releasing a kid's book too. And at the time, she had a much bigger social media following than I did.
Yeah.
I didn't even have Instagram at the time. So they found out and they canceled the book deal. And then my agent texts me, she's no longer working with me. And I'm like, "Oh, wow. Well, that just sucks." And I went into a really like dark funk because like I love writing, and like it's always been a dream to become a published author. Mm-hmm. And like here I had the dream, and it was just ripped away from me. And for like 8 months, I was just like depressed. I mean, like real, like my wife, who's not a like, I have to fight with her that if she has a headache, I'm like, "Just take 2 Tylenol, please." She's like, "You need to get medication because this is not normal." And then one day, my son, who's now 14, but he was about 6 or 7 at the time, he comes home with a project. And the project was, "When I'm 50, what are you going to be when you're 50? And he wrote at the bottom, "I'm going to be like my dad and I'm going to write." And it was at that moment when it hit me that it's no longer about me. It's my kids can't see that I quit on my dream. And 6 months later, I got another book deal. I dusted the manuscript off, started chopping it around again, and I got a book deal.
Nice.
So, you know, everything, this whole brand is thanks to my son's second grade teacher who gave him that assignment.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
And so that led, that leads into my big question that I was talking about earlier. And I don't know the best way to phrase this, but like why, and I've seen this before with issues, like you see a shooting in a synagogue, like in, the northeast, right?
Yep.
Or in Dallas, it's targeted. It's racial, anti-Semitic targeting. Why is it that there's such a distaste for firearms and guns in certain aspects of the Jewish community?
Hi, I'm Chris from Big Tech's
Ordnance, and I'm Ian from Big Tech's
Ordnance. And today we've got the weekly update. So first off, from Voltor is the classic Myrrh upper receivers, right? So we've got them in foliage green, black, standard black. Those were my picks. What do you got over there?
For all the wheel gun enthusiasts out there, we've started carrying some Safariland Comp 3 and Comp 2 speed loaders for J frames and K frames. So if you guys need a good speed loader for all of your revolver needs, We got some. We have the new Streamlight Wedge XT also. These come in black and FDE. Great little task light. You know, drop your keys underneath the couch. You're looking for your burrito. Good little option from Streamlight. Comes with a little lanyard on it as well.
Solid price point on those. I'll have to reference the price point on
USB-C
those.
USB-C rechargeable, and it has a deep carry pocket clip on it.
Yeah, so option.
Looks great.
Coming up, there's a bunch of classes. We've got Paradox training. Be across the street at the range. Doing that the 27th, not this weekend, but next weekend. Anyway, lots of training events coming up. We just also posted the Sons of Liberty.
Oh, yeah, the Armors class
in May. It's up on the website. Anyway, thanks for watching.
Be safe.
Finger guns.
Okay, so to answer this question, you kind of have to get a small history lesson and kind of a breakdown of Judaism. So within Judaism, there's kind of like a bunch of sects, right? There's like Orthodox Judaism, and that includes like someone like me, like I'm Orthodox, but that also includes like the Hasidic guys, you know, with the long things and the freaking beaver hats, just want to like pull, right? Like you have like those are Orthodox Jews. Then you have conservative Jews, and not conservative politically, but more like cafeteria Catholics. Have you ever heard that term? Yeah, so right. So kind of like they're more like cafeteria Catholics, and same thing. And then there's Reform Jews, which are like I said earlier, gynos, right? Like Jews in name only. And again, it's not a blanket statement on all of them. I know some Reform Jews who are amazing people. I know conservative Jews who are amazing. So you got to break it down that way. And then you have to go back in history, right? In the 1800s, you had a bunch of pogroms throughout Eastern Europe. And every time there was a pogrom, if the Jews fought back, if they killed, let's say, one Cossack, they would come back and get 100-fold, right? They'd kill 10, 15 people just for the Jews defending themselves. So in Europe, they kind of just kept their heads down, lived in their little ghettos, and were like, hey, this is just the lot we have. We just keep our heads down, stay out of the way, and hope for the best. 1900s come around. You have Jews in America who will vote for a Republican governor but vote for a Democratic mayor, right? Kind of like whatever's best at that moment for where they live. And that was very common across America. Fast forward. You go back to Europe where not only do you still have pogroms and stuff happening, but you now have the Holocaust. So at the end of the Holocaust, 1946, you had a massive influx of Jews coming from Europe as refugees to America, mainly, you know, landing Ellis Island in New York and also Los Angeles, which is where my grandfather went. Mm. The problem is you just went through the Holocaust. You literally have nothing but the clothes on your back.
Yeah.
But what they did have was all of FDR's New Deal, right? All these social welfare programs. So these Jews who had nothing were able to rely on social welfare to help them get through. The problem is FDR was a Democrat. So the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, all these Jews felt a debt to be paid to the Democratic Party because they helped them coming over from Europe after the Holocaust. Those you know, refugees have kids. They're also taught, oh, Democrat, Democrat, Democrat. And then as the Democratic Party changed from, you know, your JFK Democrat to what we have now, they're still like, oh, my grandparents voted Democrat. My parents voted Democrat. I'm a Democrat. And with that, what the Democrats did is what a lot of Jews do. So that's why you do have a lot of Jews who are anti-gun, because the Democrats are saying, oh, we need guns. But it's more than just that. You also have the parents themselves who witnessed what happened during the Holocaust. They're like, we just do not want to see guns ever again for the rest of life, which is understandable.
Yeah.
However, what they failed to understand upon coming here is we have a Second Amendment. We are able to purchase guns and use them to defend ourselves against tyranny. That's what they never grasped. And that mindset of like, no guns, no guns, no guns, passed down from generation to generation until, like I said, now you have a bunch of gynos running around. And I do know, like, there's always people that bring it up. Yes, the biggest gun grabbers in the U.S. government, majority of them are Jews. But when do you ever see them practicing anything Judaism, right? It's only when they need to show off, oh, we're Jews too. We support this. We like, shut up. No, you don't. Like, right? Like, you, no, you don't, right? You're like I said, a gyno, right? A Jew in name only, nothing more. Like Chuck Schumer. Diane Feinstein was like the biggest one. Bloomberg. And I mean, there's obviously a ton more that I'm just not thinking of off the top of my head. But yeah, they happen to be Jewish, but that doesn't make Jews anti-gun necessarily, because they're the ones passing it. So, you know, my focus, my goal is to, I guess part of my activism is not necessarily just to stand up in front of Congress and, you know, yell at them that people with ARs don't get in cattle cars. My goal is to educate Jews on their Second Amendment rights, to build the Second Amendment by building another, I guess call it a quasi army, if you will, of Second Amendment defenders who happen to be Jewish, who are out there learning, training, getting involved. And that for me is probably more important.
So earlier you brought up something like on how your parents reacted when they found out that you had a gun. You know, they were like appalled by it, just like not even just like, oh, you have a gun, we don't agree with that. It was like, what are you thinking? How could you possibly have a gun? Like, it was something that they, from hearing you say it, it sounds like something that they couldn't even like fathom, like why you had a gun. Is that typical that like within the Jewish community, or is that?
So yes,
is that a typical response?
It is very typical, but at the same time, again, this was already, you know, 12-13 years ago. Yeah. But at the same, a lot of things have changed now. But at the same time, a lot of it is not just, you know, I can't believe you have a gun. It's the mentality, right? My father's father survived the camps. My father's father was hid by farmers for 19 months in a ditch that was maybe 48 inches long by like 36 inches wide for 19 months in a barn under planks with hay. And they were only able to come out for like an hour every night. This is a whole story in itself, but like he was hid by Ukrainian farmers. My mother's parents, my grandfather, he had numbers tattooed on his arm at 14 years old. He was pulling gold teeth from dead bodies. My grandmother escaped. Thank God she escaped the war in 1939. But they were very anti-gun. They had pictures of Obama all over their house before they both passed away. They were very rabidly anti-gun. And that kind of, you know, waterfall spills over.
Just gets passed down through.
It just when you're not in the non-Jewish world, right? Especially, I'm guessing out here, based on also what you're wearing, you guys all hunt, right? I guess that's an understatement, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Okay, so in Judaism, hunting is not allowed, right? We're not allowed to kill an animal for food. We have to slaughter it according to Jewish law and tradition. Mm-hmm. But also, we can't just go – we're not allowed to, because it's also trophy hunting. Now, there is some gray zone if you want to do like feral hog hunting, because that's more pest control. So there's a little more gray zone. But Jews do not have a tradition of going hunting on the first day.
So there's no like recreational use for guns.
Right.
That's kind of, okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So Jews don't have a gun culture.
Right.
Right, non-Jews do. My kids, they sure as hell have a gun culture now, because you know my oldest son shoots. My daughter, when she's in the mood to shoot, she's 12. My 7-year-old is like friggin' hopped up on something, waiting till the end of April where He's going to turn 8, and he gets to learn to shoot.
That's awesome.
My 2-year-old is Satan reborn, so he's never touching a gun. But again, there's no culture within the Jewish faith. There is no culture, which is incredible. And this is something I also talk about. Look at Jewish history, right? From Abraham fighting the kings to Jacob preparing for war to Joshua conquering the land to the King David to the Maccabees to the Warsaw Ghetto uprising. I mean, Judaism has a warrior heritage.
I was going to say, it's a very deep heritage of a warrior of culture.
We were crazy warriors. But we forgot about that. It's no longer part of our heritage. Yeah, we might talk about the Maccabees on Hanukkah. No, but it's no longer part of who we are. And it's very sad to see that, because Jews, even in America, they want to rely on law enforcement to protect them. And we all know, I mean, even according to the Supreme Court, law enforcement does not have a duty to protect.
Yeah.
Not one. And it's sad that that's the way a lot of them think.
How often do you go to Israel? I know you said you were there not too long ago. What's the view over there in regards to guns?
So I would like to go to Israel more often, but you know, it's much easier when you're single or even just married. But now I have 4 kids.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's a pain, and it will break your wallet in half.
Yeah, if you're taking them, it's going to be expensive. If you're leaving them back, it's going to be expensive.
Either way, right?
Yeah, either way.
Last time I was there was about 6 years ago. Israel has a very interesting gun culture, because their culture is based solely on the military.
Mm-hmm.
So pre-October 7th, if you wanted to own a firearm in Israel, you were only able to do it in certain areas of Israel. Also, you were only able to own one handgun at a time. The gun had to be registered, and you were only able to own 50 rounds of ammo at any given time in your home.
Wow.
I have close to 50 rounds of ammo on me right now. Just on me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, literally on me. So their culture is based on, when you're in the military, you get a gun. Once you're out, you have to apply for a permit, and that's not even guaranteed, even if you were in the military. But on top of that, you can't own a long gun. Meaning, everyone's like, oh, people in Israel, I see them all walking around with tavors. I'm like, no, they're all military. You cannot own I don't believe you can own a 22, a shotgun, AR, tavor, Galil. I mean, you name it. You cannot own any of these guns in Israel.
Wow.
Now, a lot's changed since October 7th. I think that they're giving licenses out on a much faster scale. But even then, like, you still have to get on the phone with them. They have to interview you. Then, like, it takes a week to get it. Instead of such saying, guys, we're at war.
Yeah.
Go buy a gun. We'll work out the details later.
Yeah.
But I do believe that you're now able to have 100 rounds of ammo. That's it. Still no long guns. They were giving out long guns, but I don't know if they were giving them out to former military or, you know, like civilians. I don't know. I just know they were giving out some long guns, but to my knowledge, you can only have 100 rounds of ammo at any given time now in your home, which, again, is ridiculous. Because I know all of us here combined probably have more ammo in our home than probably all of the kibbutzes that were attacked.
When that happened in October, and just any time that there's something that it just, I'm at a loss for words, that a culture as old, I mean, one of the oldest, like, documented cultures in the world, that has such a rich history, can have just that look at being able to protect yourself. that outlook on it. And you know, there's stuff, and we've talked about it before. Like we have a really awesome broad base of customers, right? I mean, this is the most political we've ever got on the podcast. But our customer base is really broad. And one of those segments, and you can see from orders and stuff, is like, we have a huge Vietnamese population that orders from us. And I mean, those dudes have been persecuted in the last 50 years, right? Like and Houston has a huge Vietnamese population. And most of those came back or came from the Vietnam War, you know, refugees, the boat people, whatever, afterwards. And they have a very accepting culture now of arming themselves because they've lived through the persecution.
Right.
Within a generation or two. And I just keep on bringing it up because it just blows my mind that you don't.
No, and it does. And it's been a very long and lonesome battle for the last 7 years because here I am, you know, being really the only Orthodox Jew. Now, I have a couple buddies. I have the tactical rabbi who's a great guy. I have this guy, Yossi Elefort, who has an amazing program in LA called Magen Am, teaching people. They do amazing work, but both of them are coming from the training side. I'm the only Orthodox Jew that's actually on the advocacy side. And it has been a very long and uphill battle trying to educate Jews on their Second Amendment rights. And only since October 7th, I mean, I've taken over 100 people to the range since October 7th just to learn to shoot. That's it. Most of them had never picked up a gun before. I would say out of all the people that I took shooting, there was one couple that went through 100 rounds. Everyone else, top 25, 35 rounds. They're like, okay, we're done. But they eventually bought. Now they go more often, which I'm happy.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a very long and lonesome uphill battle because it's not part of their culture.
Yeah.
And again, they continuously fail to see that the Second Amendment is there, and that they have the right to utilize it. So you know, but hey. I can only do so much. I'm going to keep on doing what I'm doing. You know, being on podcasts like this, getting my name and what I do out there definitely helps. So inspiring people. It's been fantastic. I have like camo yarmulkes on my website. And one of the best things is like I get messages from people like rural Alabama. They're like, hey, we're Jewish. Never been to synagogue, but we're going to go to the high holidays wearing your camo yarmulke so we can show it off. I'm like, if I'm bringing more Jews back into the fold because of camo yarmulkes, right? Like, I'm doing things that some of the biggest rabbis in the world can't do, like reaching middle America.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. I love it.
That's awesome.
I'm going to go pee real quick.
Yeah, go for it.
You're good.
The culture differences is stuff that, you know, sometimes you don't think of and you're like, yeah, I'm sitting here in multi-cam pants right now. I can get away with that with the job that I do and everything. But growing up, like guns were readily accessible to the point where like my dad could have probably did a little better on the gun safety aspect, right? With access. But I knew, like, I didn't go down and play. I didn't play with them when nobody was home. I didn't touch them when I wasn't supposed to. I didn't want to get my ass whipped, basically.
Right.
But I had the respect for them and the rules that you didn't go do that without proper supervision. And that is something like when you talk about, oh, like my parents were shocked about it. Like I can't even fathom that. Like I can't even like. I was showing my dad the M79 that my buddy 3D printed for me over Christmas. My dad's laughing and he's checking it out and he's looking at all how it's worked and how it how it's put together, and just getting a kick out of it. Because like, he doesn't have access to some of that stuff or some of the guns like I have.
Right.
I mean, he's a classic bolt action, you know,
old school
guy. And, but he's not shocked about it. We could show up at the range right now and be like, hey, Dad, here's a machine gun. Let's go shoot it. And Dad have a chuckle about it and keep on going, you know, or take a picture of it to show his buddies, you know.
So it's funny because, like, you know, I have friends who also aren't into it. And they just, I just got gifted a gun from Watchtower Firearms in Allen West. I know you guys saw it.
Yeah.
I'll show it to you after. It's a killer rifle. But, like, it's Cerakoted battle-worn Israeli flag. Oh, and nice. It is so gorgeous. Like, the work on it's fantastic. But, like, I'll show my friends, and they're like, oh, my God, that's a killing machine like none other. And I'm like, no, it's a regular. You're like, to them, it's different because you see a Cerakoted firearm, you'll be like, okay, it's a nice Cerakote job. But, like, it's not like, oh, my God. But, like, to these people, to these Jews that aren't into it, that don't have that culture, that don't have that upbringing, it's kind of like, you know, like your mind's blown.
Yeah.
That because it has a paint job on it, it's clearly a more efficient killing machine. Like, again, it's all cultural. It's all based. I mean, I know with my kids, not only do they shoot, but like I'll take out my Glock and I'll start cleaning it. And my 7-year-old's like, can I help? And I'm like, yeah, of course. And like, you know, like I'll clean the barrel and then I give him the snake and I let him, you know, snake the barrel. And he loves it. I'm making it part of their upbringing so that by the time they're older, it's not even going to be a question about what firearms are for.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can have a good time with them. There's no question about that. Right. Like anything that goes boom, I'll do, right? But I want them to understand that, hey, we live in a country that affords us the right. Well, it's not even – it's a God-given right, but it affords us the ability to carry firearms because it's built into the fabric of our nation. And we need to utilize that because, you know, as we've seen, most of the Jews who've in America who have picked up a gun now have become gun owners – they're not doing it because of what's going on in Israel. They're doing it because of what's going on in America, you know? And to them, they're like, oh, wow, it's actually at home now. And we need to make sure that we're safe. So.
You got any questions, Brendan?
When you're talking to a lot of these people, what's usually the, argument from them? And then how do you approach like answering that for them? Like, how do you even begin to try to explain that to somebody who's grown up in a culture like that?
I mean, it's one of the things, a lot of their arguments are, you know, having a gun in the house makes everyone less safe and more of a chance for an accident to happen. I'm like, do you have cooking knives on your counter? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, well, how come your kid isn't going around stabbing you and everyone else? They're like, oh, that it's not the same thing. I'm like, I can take a knife, leave it on my kitchen counter. I can take my gun, leave it on the kitchen counter. Which one's going to kill someone faster? It's like, well, no one until they pick up a knife. I'm like, oh, so it's the person using it, not the tool. And then they, of course, they try to, you know, make excuses for why it's different. And I always tell them, like, it's a tool. What's the famous line from Shane? It's what's the famous line? A gun is as bad as a good as the man using it. Something along those lines. Classic Western. But yeah, that's pretty much, you know, they do it. And then when I try to tell them, I'm like, hey, look, you don't want to have a gun, you don't have to have a gun. You don't want to be around them, don't be around them. That's fine. I'm good with that. I think you're crazy in the world we live in, but I'm good with that. The minute you start trying to take my rights away, my ability to defend myself, that's when we have a problem. So a lot of Jews in my community are very pro-gun. Let me rephrase. A lot of them are very pro-Second Amendment. They just, again, we don't want to have anything to do with guns. It's an irrational fear, right? Like, oh, no, we understand what you're saying, but it's just not for us. Okay, fine. A lot of them are, hey, I bought a gun. I'm going to go use it. A lot of them are very closet gun owners because in Judaism, you know, like on our Sabbath, there's no phones, there's no computers, no TV, anything like that. So you get together very often with friends and you have play dates for your kids. You know, you walk them to houses. And if a lot of people are like, well, if they know that we own a gun, they're not going to send their kid over and we're going to become a pariah and then it's going to affect our kids' social. I'm like, no, those are the people you don't want around. It's going to enhance his social capabilities. But so, you know, that there's those type of people too. But overall, in the Orthodox Jewish world, most people are pro-gun, pro-Second Amendment. You either are, you know, hey, I'm going to the range all the time, or, you know, closet gun owners, or it's just not for us. When you get more into the Reform and Conservative Judaism, and this is not a blanket statement for anyone watching, that's where you tend to find people who are more liberal and more anti-gun.
Interesting. So maybe not necessarily for the Jewish community specifically, but any of the Bible-believing community, is there a moral or biblical argument you have for, I guess, responsibility for preservation of life? Like, do you ever have that with people?
Or? Yeah, all the time. I mean, I apologize. I'm not, like I said, I'm not a rabbi that also my memory sucks when it comes to things like this. But in the Old Testament, I mean, straight out, not even in like the you know, God, I was about to say it in Hebrew, not even in the commentary, like from ancient rabbis and stuff like that, like straight up in the Old Testament says, if someone comes to kill you, you can kill them first. I mean, straight up in the Old Testament.
Right.
So, you know, hey, I follow the Old Testament. I'm good with that one.
Does that ever resonate with anybody?
I mean, I think most people would in the Orthodox Jewish world, you're not really going to find anyone that's going to say like, oh, well, we'll just, you know, call the police and hopefully they get there on time. Like most Orthodox Jew will be like, oh, you know, if we have to fight back to protect our family, we'll do it. But it's the matter of, are you going to do it using a baseball bat, a kitchen knife, or the firearm? So that's really what it comes down to. But the sanctity of life is very, very important in the Jewish culture. So, you know, we believe in it greatly. So the Old Testament straight out says, hey, someone comes to kill you, if someone rises up to kill you, you can kill them first.
I know that one of the things that you've talked about before, and then a couple of my acquaintances online have talked about, one of the training issues is most training classes occur on Saturday and Sundays, mm-hmm. right? And it's been brought up before. And Saturday, correct, is the Jewish Sabbath.
Yeah.
Right. And have you had any luck organizing training classes outside that window?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Luckily, I'm not luckily. I mean, I worked hard for it, but you know, I have friends who are instructors, and they're willing to do a Sunday course instead of a 2-day course. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll kind of pack it in, move faster than they would normally. But you know, I have a good friend, Jarrah Hutchins. She goes by Clearing the Chamber on social media. She's one of the best instructors I've ever worked with. She's in the DFW area. Rob Pincus. Rob has called me numerous times and said, hey, get a group of 10 people together. This is how much he'll charge, but I'll come out and we'll do a 1-day course, like an intro on a Sunday from like 8 a.m. to, you know, 7 p.m.
Yeah.
So there's definitely people who have reached out to me to do like more, I guess, in-depth training. I take people to the range all the time. I mean, I don't have an instructor's license, but I've been around long enough to know what to do. But I'm not teaching them any like tactics. I'm just like, let's get that first round.
Yeah.
Let's just like introducing them to shooting. I mean, I'll help them with their grip. I'll help them with their stance. You know, where you put your finger on the trigger, like stuff like that, how to line up the sights, and kind of just get them comfortable enough that either they'll call me back to keep on doing it, or they'll be like, you know what, we survived. You know,
yeah.
That's my big thing. My wife's co-teacher, our families are very close. She called me up. She's like, "Hey, I want to learn to shoot." And she's like, I'm like, "Wait, you want to what?" I was shocked when she called me. But we go to the range. I got the gun in her hand, and you can see her. I mean, it wasn't even like you can see the gun moving. Like, you can see her trembling.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. Let's make sure the finger's off the trigger. We're good. I said, take a deep breath. She's like, okay. She kind of calmed down. I didn't make her. I made sure she still had the gun in her hand. She had to calm down with the gun in her hand. Mm-hmm. I put one round. There was only one round in the mag. And she pulls the trigger, hits the target. It was like to the left. And she puts the gun down quickly. And she's like, you know, starts almost hyperventilating. So, you know, I kind of put my hands on her arms. I'm like, hey, breathe. And she's like, okay, I'm good. I'm like, how was it? I know what her answer was going to be. Yeah. She's like, that was the scariest thing I've ever done in my life. I said, but did you die? she's like, no, I didn't. I'm like, shocking, right? You survived. You know what that means? She's like, well, I'm like, you can do it again. And you know what I said, you know what the result is going to be? She's like, what? I'm like, you're not going to die. And she ended up going through like 60 rounds.
Oh, wow.
And she loved it. Like she, it was like waking up a beast in her. She's like, mama bear, you know, like just going crazy. And she's asked me to take her back. And like, that's what I enjoy. I'm not into the whole – I love taking all the tactical courses and stuff like that, but I'm not into the whole, you know, giving those courses. Yeah. I love introducing people to firearms, putting it in their hand for the first time, see their face when they hit that X, you know. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So
what are some other resources that you would recommend that that you're familiar with for people that are – possibly in the Jewish community or new to guns that might have somehow stumbled on our podcast? Besides your book.
I mean, besides my book, it's one of the things a lot of people have reached out to me. In my 7 years of working in the advocacy side, writing books, and I hate to use the word influencer, but somewhat becoming of a social media influencer, I have a very big network of people that I know across the country. So I had someone in Ohio. Hey, I'm Jewish. I've never picked up a gun before. Can you help me? I'm like, give me a few minutes. So I reached out to my friend Amanda. Hey, you're in Ohio. Who can we hook up? And she goes, gives me a number. Tell this person to call this guy. Tell them I sent you. Guy called and he got the instruction, right? Like, I'm able, people can reach out to me. It's hard to say, like, I mean, other resources out there. I mean, in reality, if you just walk into any gun range and say, hey, look, I'm scared about what's going on. I need help. What am I shooting? What do I do? I would be shocked if there's ranges out there that would turn someone like that away.
Yeah.
Now, I would say don't necessarily buy the gun they tell you to buy. That's one of my biggest things. I had a friend of mine. He's like, hey, I need to go shooting. I'm like, okay. He goes, I'm buying the Smith & Wesson Shield 9. I'm like, okay. He goes, what do you think of it? I'm like, hate it. He goes, but what? I'm like, I hate it. He goes, why do you hate it? I'm like, I think the trigger sucks and the grip sucks more. And he's
there's like, a lot better options out there, I think.
I think so too. So what I told him, what he told me is like, yeah, well, I know this Mossad guy, ex-Mossad, whatever, blah, 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 going on. And I'm like, I don't care how super secretive James Bond-esque this guy is. He's an idiot. If he's telling you to buy the Smith, he's an idiot. It's not, oh, you can't say that. I'm like, oh, I can clearly say that. This guy knows nothing about guns. So I take him to the range. I take this guy to the range. Of course, we rent the Smith & Wesson, and there's a great range, and I hope you don't mind, because I know
you're good.
Oh, no. Big Tex is next door, but in Dallas, in Plano, there's a fantastic ranch. I love giving them props because they've opened their doors like crazy to me, called Mr. Guns. And I take people there, and the range charges my customers, people I take, $50 gets a lane for unlimited time, unlimited handgun rentals, and 100 rounds of ammo.
Oh, nice.
Which is a great deal.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, the owner's like, no, I want to make sure that Jews are armed and trained. So I love Mr. Guns. If you're ever in Dallas, Plano area, check them out. That aside, I take them there. We rent like 12 different handguns. Some of the, you know, obviously the biggest ones on the market, the 365, X Macro, 43X, 48, 19, all those. And we put them down. I put like 5 rounds in each mag. And he goes, okay, where's that Smith? He goes, I don't know why you got all these. He goes, where's the Smith? Right here. He picks it up. 3 shots. He goes, yep. Don't want this gun. I'm like, see? Super secret agent man is an idiot. And he's like, shut up. You know, like it's just one of those things. Like, you know, everyone always asks, people reach out to me all the time, what gun should we buy for? Yeah. Like, I'm not telling you. I can tell you some of the top guns on the market, but what I'll tell you is go to the range. So yeah, if they don't want to reach out to me, if you have Jewish followers who are getting into it or something like that, just you can reach out to me. Like I said, there's a lot of people in Houston, obviously a really large growing community. Mm-hmm. I've told people to come here. I know it's what, like an hour away, give or take, to Houston.
Yeah.
But
depends on how from everywhere in Houston.
Depends on what part of Houston.
Yeah. So like I tell them, I'm like, hey, yeah, you know, feel free to go to Big Techs. I'm sure they'll walk you through, you know. But it's good now that we've met, like I can actually really tell them that. So I tell people, like, go to your local range. Just tell them what your concerns are. Mm-hmm. Don't let them tell you what to buy. You need to buy what you want. I have a friend also who just bought his first AR, and the person he bought it from, I know that guy. He's a great guy, but he's a salesman. And he sold him a 308 for his first AR. And my buddy's like, did I overpay? I'm like, I don't think you overpaid for that 308. But why the hell would you buy a 308 for your first AR?
Yeah.
And he's like, and then you just see him, like, his face just like, was like, crap. I said, dude, I told you, call me. Like, I will help you. I'm not even charging you to walk you through. I'm like, you can get, like, he paid $1,000. I'm like, for $1,000, you can get a relatively solid, maybe not, you know, top of the line, but you can get a solid AR for $1,000. And I think he was able to recoup the money.
Good.
But it's like, oh my God.
I used to have when I worked behind a gun counter back in the day, there was a certain salesman on the floor that absolutely hated whenever a customer would come see me over at the desk, because 9 times out of 10, I would talk them out of buying whatever they had just been talked into.
Yeah.
Like, you have no, you don't need that revolver. No, you don't need a 12 gauge shotgun for home defense when you're a 67 year old woman. And like, not saying a 67 year old woman couldn't handle 12 gauge,
right?
But that particular 67 year old woman had no business getting a 12 gauge,
right?
Like, but all she saw was like, oh, her budget's this, I can sell her this, mm-hmm. and it goes out the door. And I absolutely cannot stand those types of salesmen.
Yeah. When people come in, when I used to work at a gun store, I would have women come in and they're like, what gun should I buy? I'll be like, there's black ones, green ones, big ones, blue ones. I'm like, we can play Dr. Seuss all day. You know, I'm not telling you what to buy. I said, again, it seems like you have small hands. We can look at the small guns. We can look at the bigger guns. I have, I know she used to carry one of my closest friends. She's one of my main editor for my books. She is like 5'1", maybe, and maybe like a buck 05, maybe buck 10, something like that. And like, she carries a Glock 19. and she can handle it better than most people I know. But you would never think someone that small is carrying a Glock 19. And it's just like one of those things that, you know, everyone's different. Everyone has different hand sizes, hand sensitivities to texture. Everything's different.
Or somebody that size carrying a Glock 34.
True story. I used to work at a gun store, and such a douchey looking dude walks in, open carrying appendix. I promise you, a Desert Eagle 44.
Oh yeah,
and we all just look, and the guy just looked like, you know that guy I'm talking about, right? We just all look. We're like, oh dude. You need a girlfriend. And he was dressed nicely. Like, he was just in slacks and a button-down shirt tucked in. So, like, but, like, oh, my God, no. Why?
Video games got him.
You got any other questions for him?
Yeah. So, on the advocacy side, you know, you're kind of getting out there. You know, you're putting your face out there, your name, being a voice for, you know, the community and stuff. Have you seen any, like, pushback from – you're kind of blending two communities, you know, the Jewish community and then the gun community. What's the reception been like between both? Like, how is that – have you encountered any pushback or any
– So the negative? best part is the gun community. Now, I'm not saying it's perfect. There's definitely a lot of people who are flawed. However, since I've joined the community 7 years ago, to my knowledge, I cannot remember – one instance where I had anything anti-Semitic thrown at me. I'm not talking about social media, you know, keyboard warriors. I'm talking about, like, going to shows and stuff like that. It's actually been the opposite. People have been so accepting. They're like, it is amazing to see a Jewish guy representing their Jewish faith, also representing, you know, the gun industry and the Second Amendment as passionately as yours. Like, it's such a pleasure to see. In the Jewish world, I have been called everything from, you know, gun nut, conspiracy theorist, it's never going to happen. Everything we've all heard. Mm-hmm. And of course, those people are now the ones knocking on my door. And, you know, you kind of got to check the ego at the door, which I do the minute I have someone who used to ridicule me. But, you know, I'll check the ego at the door. I'll get them into the guns and stuff like that. And then obviously once they buy their first gun and they get really into it, like, 3-4 months later after they get into it, that's when I start making fun of them.
Yeah.
and that's when I let the ego out of the cage. But no, to the most part, Orthodox Jews have been – thought I was crazy, but they weren't necessarily – it wasn't necessarily pushback. They're kind of like, you're crazy, but do whatever you want to do. It's more of, like I said, the conservative and reform Jews that I get the hate from. I was told by a guy in Pittsburgh that I'm not a real Jew because I support guns.
Was he Orthodox?
No. I think he had to be Reformed.
Yeah.
But I posted a picture. I kind of changed my logo, kind of more of like an Art Deco logo that said "Rabbi blessed, God approved." It's my kind of my tagline for the store, and. I posted that, and somehow this guy saw and starts going off on me that, I'm not a real Jew. And the best part is I had friends, like I have a friend, she's now in the Kansas State House named Rebecca Schmoy, who she is one of the heads of 1 Million Moms Against Gun Control. She's awesome. And she's like, she went all mama bear for me. Like, I think she's maybe like a couple years older than me, but she just took this guy to school. It was fantastic. But, you know, like I get stuff like that. I do get that the best is when liberal Jews call me a Nazi. That's always fun. That's actually really fun because I'm pro-gun, I have to be a Nazi.
That's wild.
But, you know, I get pushback also just from, like I said, it's really the keyboard warriors, you know, not enough Jews bit the curb. I love the smell of Cyclone B in the morning, which was my favorite one because I'd never heard that one before. Hitler wasn't such a bad guy. I mean, I get this stuff often, and I actually designed the meme whenever someone sends me like anti-Semitic, like especially the Holocaust-oriented things. It's a picture of Hitler saluting, And it says, I've had it up to here with your insensitive jokes. And I'll just respond with that. And they disappear.
They disappear.
Yeah. Because you're trying,
can't respond to that.
How do you respond to that?
Yeah,
how do you respond to an Orthodox Jew? You're trying to get a rise out of him. And what he sends back to you is literally a picture of Hitler doing the Nazi salute. Like, you literally have nothing. Nothing. So that's a great one. I love using that meme. So, but yeah, I mean, most of the pushback comes from liberal and reform, liberal Jews. Like I said, Orthodox Jews either don't want to have anything to do with me because, again, no, he's a gun guy. But I do everything as an Orthodox Jew, meaning I specifically won't wear a hat. Not that I'm against hats. I mean, I sell them on my website, right? Like, I specifically won't wear a hat. I will only wear my yarmulke because I am not afraid of who I am and what I represent for the Second Amendment and for the Jewish people. It's something that's very important to me. So
yeah, it's cool to see somebody taking a stand from both sides. You know, like
yeah, for sure,
not hiding anything, just being very upfront and being like, "This is me. This is who I am. This is what I'm doing." You know.
Yeah, and it's crazy because like you saw the rifle, and like Alan West, you know, gifted me this rifle, and he said straight out, and he goes, "For your defense of the Second Amendment and the Jewish people," and I'm like, "Oh, right there," someone realized it, you know, but. Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. It's something that I don't take lightly. Something that's very important to me. But at the same time, like I've got a very good sense of humor. So like you'll see at SHOT Show, you know, Black Rhino Concealment, the holster company.
I'm not familiar with them.
So they're online, Black Rhino Concealment. So they make a lot of really funky holsters. They do a lot of fun stuff. So I reached out to them because they did a fun taco holster for the We Like Shooting podcast, I believe it was. And I said, hey, guys, so you know how, you know, Jews love bagels. They're like, well, we've heard the stereotype. I'm like, yeah, do you want to make me a bagel holster? And they did. I literally walked around SHOT Show last year open carrying a bagel. And people, and with a jersey on, the pew pew Jew written on the back, people were like, excuse me? Is that what we think it is? I'm like, yes, it's a bagel holster. And they're like, and you're Jewish. I'm like, yep. They're like, are we allowed to laugh? I'm like, it's anti-Semitic if you don't laugh, you know? Like, but yeah, you'll see my bagel holster at SHOT Show. I proudly open carry that. You got to have fun. You got
to
have fun.
So for people who want to have fun and get to know you a little bit better, where can people find you right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Across social media, thepewpewjew.com, at thepewpewjew. Pretty much just type in thepewpewjew to Google or whatever, and you know all my information comes up.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate your time. We're glad that you gave us a shout-out before you came into town so we could invite you over. You've had the tour, I think.
Yep.
Take you across the street here in a little bit and show you the rest of the show.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the range. So hopefully shoot there. Got my rifle.
Yeah. So if you got any questions for our newfound friend here or us, leave it in the comments, drop it on social media, leave a review, check out thepewpewjew.com, check out my new favorite book on gun control, and let us know. And Happy New Year 2024.
Yes.
Is here, and this is the first podcast of 2024. So appreciate it. Brendan, thank you for joining us. Mike, thank you for your time.
Yeah. Thank y'all for watching.
Thank you for listening.
For listening.
Or doing both. Which I would hope you do. Anyway. Stay strapped or get clapped. Since Ian, once again, is not here.